I spoke recently with Bucks general manager John Horst, who revealed to me, Eric, exclusively exactly what the Bucks are going to do in this draft.
So with 23 and 33 for us, it's right in the middle of the draft. We think it's really deep in the middle to have both picks. We have a ton of flexibility. We could move up. We could move down. We could get out.
Okay. So, all right. Hey, so you heard it here first.
All our
live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
At 6:12 this morning, just some light rain, shower, sprinkles possible, as you heard in Tyler's forecast. There are weather largely quiet for the next several days, while other parts of the Midwest continue to be ravaged by severe weather. And entire communities really remain at risk as a dam in southern Minnesota is still in, listen to this phrase, Eric, quote, imminent failure condition. That does not sound promising.
No, thank you.
We never, ever thought in a million years this would ever happen, and here it is.
A woman who lives near the dam in the Mankato area of Minnesota, the Rapidan Dam. She was talking with CBS News. I'll have Greg Hill, our producer here, put the video up. If you're watching on the live stream, you can text watch to 855-616-1620 or click watch. Watch live on the website or mobile app. One of the news stations out that way put a drone up, and in the video you can see this house that is teetering on the brink of collapse into the rushing waters.
Do you know what this reminded me of?
I know exactly.
Right when you saw it, the first thing you think is Lake Delton.
What was that, 08?
Was it that?
Was it 08?
Long ago?
It's been a bit.
It's been a bit, but I don't...
It was a long time ago. It's back. The lake is back, but it essentially drained out from major rain and issues.
Floodwater swallowing houses whole. And that appears to be what could happen to this one house. More concerning, though, is you have tens of thousands of people who live in communities downstream at risk if that dam fails on the Blue Earth River. Right now, strong storms, as we speak, still ripping through Missouri, central and southern Illinois. And we just got missed again by severe weather Tuesday night. This is from Skokie, Illinois, and that's just south of our border.
It sounded like this giant crash, and I assumed for a second that it was just our patio umbrella, but it wasn't.
It was not. Giant tree came down in that woman's yard. Skokie, what, about half hour south, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty good. Yeah,
kind of
pretty good
long idea. Long I-94. Mm-hmm. South Dakota dealing with river swelling again. Sheriff's deputy there talking with CBS News.
It's beyond words. I mean, to us, it's a situation. To the families, the homeowners, this is their lives.
And while we certainly had our share, the pain is worse in some other parts of the Midwest this morning while we get a break for now from what has been a stormy spring and start to summer. 6:15, we got sports up next.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Vetrano.
How about them Brewers?
The Brewers have won 8 straight home series.
Man, you can say that again, Lane Grindle.
The Brewers have won 8 straight home series.
Right, you know, you're going to have a pretty good record when that happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you got to do. You got to win series. You got to win all of them at home if you can.
Mm-hmm. Looking really good, especially pitcher Bryce Wilson just lights out. So the Brewers used that opener again for Wilson. So Hobie Milner started the first 2 innings. Then they brought in Wilson. He pitched 6 scoreless, 3 hits, 4 strikeouts. After the game, he told the Brewers Radio Network he would have loved to have pitched the 9th with the Brewers up 3-1.
I thought they were going to do that.
Yeah, he was thinking about it too.
I definitely wanted to go back out, but Peggy came in and was dominant. So, yeah, I can't complain at all.
Yeah, Peguero would get the save.
That's sweet, man. I'm like, who the hell is Peggy?
Peguero,
yeah.
Pegs,
all right.
Peggy, Peguero. He got the
Pegster.
Save. Brewers win 3-1.
Peggy McPegmeister.
Rookie Joey Ortiz also had himself a nice day, nice home run.
Joey Ortiz! Star game.
Yes, sir, Mr. Grindle. As for the Brewers, again, they win 3-1. They go for the sweep this afternoon at American Family Field, 12:40 pregame, 1:10 first pitch right here at WDTMJ.
NBA draft kicks off tonight at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The Bucks have 2 picks, numbers 23 and 33 overall. I spoke recently with Bucks general manager John Horst, who revealed to me, Eric, exclusively exactly what the Bucks are going to do in this draft.
So with 23 and 33 for us, it's right in the middle of the draft. We think it's really deep in the middle to have both picks. We have a ton of flexibility. We could move up. We could move down. We could get out.
Okay. So,
all right.
Hey, so you heard it here first.
All options are on the table.
We could do any of these things. Yes. No, Horst was a bit more revealing than that.
I like the draft a lot. I think we'll take both players, both picks. There's guys that can plug and play. I think it helped win now. Think about a little bit like what Andre Jackson did last year or A.J. Green the year before. And there's guys with a lot of upside that could really be, we think, big swings and big hits in a year or two.
I do think it's interesting, the prospect of just taking a pass, right? Trade away both your picks and just say, we count on just getting a year healthier next year and see what happens with the guys we got.
Instead of taking up roster spots on flyers.
On maybe this guy could be a contributor, sort of. Because you got to still be in win-now mode with Giannis.
Where were you, by the way, when you were talking to him?
At Summerfest.
Ah, I was going to say, it sounded like you're at some kind
of
party.
Very active, yes. First round tonight of the NBA draft begins 7 p.m. our time.
6:23 on Wisconsin's Morning News. We've had a lot of rain, and that humidity has rolled in. And you know what you think about whenever it rains, or at least I do in the summer?
We're in lockstep on this.
Oh, the first thing I think is, oh man, when are those bugs coming? When are the mosquitoes going to show up? When is the Wisconsin State bird going to take over
the state?
And it seems like, you know, as of now, it's been okay.
I feel like we shouldn't talk about it out loud.
Right, like we're going to jinx something. Wanted to get a take from PJ Leash. He is the UW entomology guy. I think his Twitter is Wisconsin Bug Guy. To get his take on, hey, when can we expect this? When are they coming? And is the rain playing a role? A
couple of things could be going on, and it really depends on where you're located in the state. Now, first of all, as you mentioned, we've had a lot of rain. And we know mosquitoes need rain for their juvenile stages to develop. So from a certain point of view, that clock is ticking. We have set the stage. They have what they need. In some areas, the mosquitoes are already out in force. In other areas, it's still a little quiet, but they could be coming.
What other ingredients might we need, PJ, to outside of the moisture, to have a bumper crop of mosquitoes?
Well, again, we need that moisture, but another factor is time and temperature as well. So the warmer it is, the more quickly mosquitoes can develop from the egg stage through the larval and pupal stages to the adult stage. But one interesting factor, especially in urban areas and suburban areas, has to do with some of our infrastructure, specifically rainwater catch basins. And if you keep getting regular rainfall, what it can sometimes do is you have rainwater sitting in those catch basins, and you can get mosquito larvae developing in there. But if you keep getting regular rains, it can actually flush some of those out. And that's really hard sometimes to figure out exactly what the overall impact of that is on local mosquito populations. But sometimes there can be some interesting dynamics with that where you get so much rain, it keeps flushing some of the larvae away, and they could actually perish as a result.
Really? So the rain is actually potentially helping
us here. There's a sweet spot, right? Like, you want a bunch, but not too much. I bet you're exactly right on that.
Right. And again, there's a lot of little variables that are kind of tugging at this too, because there are certain mosquitoes that like to develop in habitat like that. There's other ones that prefer different bodies of water. That could be a drainage ditch. It could be containers in a yard. You know, that could be a bird bath, even a low-lying spot in a tarp. There's other ones that prefer areas like cattail marshes or bogs, and those might not be affected as much by regular rainfall. So my impression is we have had what we need to get mosquitoes, and it's probably only a matter of time before they come out in greater numbers.
Oof. Do we know, are there regions of the state where it's already hot?
Yes. I have had a lot of calls and reports from northern parts of the state, which isn't too surprising in my opinion, because there's so many lakes and boggy areas in the North Woods that there's seemingly always mosquitoes up there this time of the year. Also recently, though, I have spent some time in the Driftless area and the southwestern part of the state looking for periodical cicada sightings. And boy, you get into the woods in places like Iowa County, western Dane County, even in west of there, and the mosquitoes are pretty bad there at the moment. But you get into more urban areas like Madison, Middleton, where I live, and it's a little bit quieter. The mosquitoes are out, but not absolutely awful, but you get out in the woods more and they can be really bad in some parts of the state.
So that is PJ Leash, UW-Madison entomologist there. So a couple of takeaways. The clock is ticking, he said. It's only a matter of time.
So we're going to get ours.
Right. But he also said that rain is actually helping us. It's raining enough. We've gotten almost
it's
too
so much,
much in some of these suburban areas where that's actually preventing the mosquitoes from breeding, which is helpful.
Because they need stagnant water.
Yeah.
It has to stay still.
Yeah.
But you just keep adding to it every 24 hours.
Sweet spot of rain all the time.
Brewers find a way and have a chance for a sweep this afternoon. Sports at 6:45.
You a big mall guy? You like going to the mall, taking the kids to the mall?
I suppose we don't go often. I'm surprised every time we pull into the mall on a Tuesday afternoon and it's packed.
Yeah, a lot of people go to the mall. Yeah, you're right.
And I'm like, what's going on here? My wife's like, this is the mall.
Like, people go here.
Yeah, but it's Tuesday.
Well, in North Jersey, the Newport Mall, Newport Center Mall had no AC. 4 days of no air conditioning.
At the mall?
And you may recall, it's been a bit hot on the East Coast, even worse than it's been around here with the humidity. And they've kept the place open. And it's been like 85 degrees in some spots. One store employee telling the papers there that it's a sauna upstairs in the second and third floor. But people still going to the mall despite the 80-plus degree hot and humid temperatures in this place.
Certain percentage of them thought it was, hey, let's beat the heat and go to the mall in the air conditioning.
Right? No.
Wah, wah.
Can you think of anything worse than hell?
Sweaty mall?
Yeah, sweaty mall.
What would be the worst places to be working at the mall? Like
the shoe place?
The pretzel shop.
Oh.
Right? What is that? Auntie Anne's pretzels?
But like, do you
it's
wanna,
hot. You got ovens and stuff.
If you're going to Gap, are you going to put
Sbarro,
on?
Sbarro.
You going to try on clothes?
Pizza ovens. Are you trying
Bat
on sweaty
rolls.
Clothes?
Anyway, they got the AC working again, but it says it'll take a couple of days for the place to cool down.
Okay. Till then, I guess find someplace else.
There must be a cooling center somewhere in New Jersey.
6:38 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
The first American journalist to be arrested on espionage charges in Russia since the Cold War, Evan Gerskovich, is now on trial. The trial for the Wall Street Journal reporter has now officially begun in Russia.
Evan Gerskovich was put on trial behind closed doors in the Russian city of Yekaterinburg, about 1,000 miles from Moscow. The media was briefly shown the Wall Street Journal reporter in a glass cage, his head shaved. Gerskovich has spent more than a year in detention on espionage charges that the US and Wall Street Journal condemn as fabricated. The Wall Street Journal's editor forcefully denouncing the trial as bogus.
So most believe that the Kremlin sees Gerskovich as an American hostage who could eventually then be used as trade bait.
A little bargaining chip,
so to speak.
Right.
However, pretty interesting commentary. This is from a former CBS News Moscow bureau chief. This is Beth Knobel. She's a professor at Fordham University on what has to happen first before there'd even be a trade.
Russia doesn't typically trade any prisoners until after they've been convicted. Once Evan Gerskovich is found guilty, and there's every reason to think that he will be convicted in this closed trial, then the Russians could finally move forward with some kind of deal or prisoner swap that would lead to Gerskovich's release.
So it's a step forward, you could argue, in eventually getting him back. It's just a matter of when this conviction will take place and then whether or not, depending on who Russia asks for, if
right.
the U.S. would play ball.
Larger ramifications as well in terms of journalism. So outside of this particular individual, does this have a chilling effect on other international organizations to send people
right.
to Russia to do journalism?
Certainly,
if they can be snatched off the street and then put on a sham trial, as the Wall Street Journal expects this to be, held for more than a year and then used as bait to perhaps get some prisoners released in America, like that could have a chilling effect on the journalism that we see and hear out of Russia.
He was arrested March of 2023, now officially going on trial. Mostly behind closed doors.
6:44, we got the NBA draft tonight and the Brewers with afternoon baseball. Sports next.
Time for an update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk. Here's Eric Bilstad
and Vince Vetrano.
Brewers rookie sensation Joey Ortiz. Can I call him a sensation?
Sure.
He keeps on cooking.
2-2 pitch, high fly ball, deep left field. Racing back is Langford. Onto the warning track at the wall. He leaps and is gone. Joey Ortiz sent him to the All-Star game.
Yes,
both
sir.
Brewers. His seventh home run of the season. And this rookie puts the Brewers on top 2-1.
That's right. That lead would give the Brewers the lead in the fifth. They'd go on to win 3-1 over the Rangers, thanks in part to a masterful performance by Bryce Wilson, pitcher. Six innings of shutout ball.
And he didn't start again.
Right, yeah. Came in the third inning, went six. Probably could have finished the game, but they
wanted to.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay. Enjoy Ortiz with that big home run. I like this back and forth. So after the game, MLB Brewers reporter Adam McKelvey, who joins us on the program from time to time, and Kurt Hoeg from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel were asking Murph if he realized how good Ortiz was when they first traded for him. He came in on the Corbin Burns deal from Baltimore. And it was good back and forth here. Murph says that they knew that he was great, that he could be great, but you still didn't know him.
Going into spring training, did you have him kind of penciled in on your own?
No. No. You remember my third base list in spring training? You weren't there. You were nursing. You remember the list in spring training?
Where was he?
He was not at the top.
Yeah.
We felt like we were asking about Joey Ortiz too much because you just he wasn't.
Oh, so you're going to take credit for it now, Kurt?
No, we were.
You kind of are. Now. Let's just be honest. You're taking credit for it.
He's on your list, Murph.
I don't. You think I remember back that far? I don't remember 2 days ago.
Anyway, he raved about Ortiz. So yeah, we knew he had a high ceiling, but yeah, obviously now just killing it. Brewers win 3-1. They go for the sweep this afternoon. 12:40 pregame, 1:10 first pitch right here on WTMJ.
Bucks have the 23rd pick in tonight's first round of the NBA draft. They go in the 33 slot in the second round. That's how it starts anyway, unless there's some maneuvering. I was with General Manager John Horst the other day, talked to him at Summerfest, and he told me he is considering all scenarios, even the possibility of trading away both picks and just sitting this draft out. But he does think the Bucks can find a couple of guys, even if they don't maneuver around.
There's guys that can plug and play. I think it helped win now. Think about a little bit like what Andre Jackson did last year or A.J. Green the year before. And there's guys with a lot of upside that could really be, we think, big swings and big hits in a year or two. So heavy draft, of course, there's always trade. And then you're free agency. You got to prep and get ready for that when that opens up. But it's a busy time and a fun time.
This is so different than the NBA draft, right? Where you have seven rounds.
You mean the NFL?
Than the NFL draft. What do the Packers have? Nine or 11 picks
something
over the seven
like
rounds, right?
That, yeah.
You have smaller, infinitely smaller rosters here. And if you sat this one out and just said, look, we got Giannis, we got Dame, we got a core of guys that we're going to continue to expect to get healthy, and, you know, nothing here that we like.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's always nice to take at least one flyer on a guy, right?
I guess. I mean, either no matter what happens, after we draft a couple of guys or don't, I'll be like, that sounds great.
Yep. Yeah, that is amazing.
You just never know. This guy's got upside.
Yeah, definitely.
First round of the draft from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. It's on ABC and ESPN, so locally Channel 12 if you want to watch, 7 p.m. our time.
So Stars and Stripes Honor Flight recently flew its 75th mission. Since its inception, Stars and Stripes has flown more than 10,000 veterans to Washington, D.C. Now, this flight, the most recent one, had a passenger with a voice you might recognize, a voice from this here very show, right here.
Why don't you just tell them who's on the
You'll have
the flight.
To find out. WDTMJ's John Mercure has more.
A hero's welcome in Washington, D.C. for 60 Southeast Wisconsin veterans. One of those vets is Lee LaHargue, an Air Force veteran who was in Vietnam from 1964 to 68.
This is really amazing to me. I mean, it's very emotional, and it's really great. And I just can't believe the outpouring and the welcoming that we're getting and the people that really, really seem to care. You know, it's amazing to me.
Each veteran is accompanied by a guardian, someone who watches over them all day, just kind of make sure they have everything they need. You just might know Lee's guardian.
The kids, the bands, all of that stuff, that those folks, they don't know us, and they came out there to make that special for us. That was cool.
That's Vince Vetrano, the host of Wisconsin's Morning News and Lee's son-in-law. More from Vetrano in a minute, but first Lee's story. Oh, by the way, Lee had never been to Washington, D.C. The National Mall provided a sunsplash backdrop for our conversation about Vietnam.
It wasn't good over there when I was there. We worked hard, worked 12-hour shifts and 7 days a week.
Lee had a top-secret intelligence clearance. He was a photo interpreter. U-2 spy planes and the supersonic SR-71 Blackbird took pictures. They were developed, and then Lee and others told military leaders what they were looking at. The days were long.
Every day was a little bit stressful.
But that wasn't the hardest part.
What was the toughest part about being away for the United States?
Being away. My time away seemed like it went real slow. Just being away was a problem.
Shortly after our conversation about the 60s, Lee and Vince head over to the Vietnam Wall.
Thankful for the life that I've had and been able to have, and a lot of it is the sacrifice of these guys here.
58,000 names etched in black Bangalore granite.
Kind of heartbreaking. You think that all those guys sacrificed, and what did we really get out of it, you know? They died for what they were told to do, but it's kind of a shame so many had to go.
A steady hand, an encouraging word. Vetrano helps Lahargue tackle a day that's at the same time somber and celebratory.
I didn't serve, and all these years later, there's maybe a little bit of regret there. I wondered about it, I thought about it, but never seriously pursued it. So, you know, if there's any way that I can contribute to an experience for our veterans that is of value to them, I guess that's a little something that I can do. That's where it hits me personally.
For many Vietnam vets, the day hits hardest at the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Shoulder.
At Arlington National Cemetery.
Oh.
I know a few guys that were over there and some that won't come here, and so I'm kind of representing them, I think.
Vetrano tells me today's different than all of his other trips to Washington.
We've been to D.C. a number of times, but this time with a purpose to serve Lee and to serve all these vets. So that value added to the day today is really special.
Eventually, it's back to the airport.
Mail for Ward, James. James Ward.
In flight, Vetrano is pressed into service.
I have mail for Joe Krupa. Joe Krupa.
Honor Flight does an old-fashioned mail call with letters from loved ones.
Pretty emotional. This is amazing. It's unbelievable.
After an hour and a half flight, it's time for a hero's welcome back in Milwaukee. Hugs and high fives, smiles and tears, a recognition and homecoming that's long overdue.
Of course, seeing the memorials was great, but the people that met us in D.C. and then the people that meeting us here, that's the big homecoming. It's great.
Vetrano told me he felt pride and gratitude, and as he choked up, he told me he also felt sadness.
If we can do this so well, if we can do this so right, all the strangers that came out to greet us in D.C., all the folks here back at home, the clockwork that this whole operation worked, the memorials, how is it that we're not more unified? How is it we're not more together? I'm overwhelmed by that. Boy, we sure feel broken sometimes, and this made me feel opposite of that.
And that's how an honor flight is supposed to feel. John Merkier, WTMJ News.
Appreciate John taking the time to be on that flight. That was his only duty. He did media to help publicize Stars and Stripes Honor Flight. He's a member of the board of directors. They're extraordinary people, all volunteer, 100% volunteer. And they call it an honor flight. The honor is for our veterans, but the honor was mine to escort Lee on this important trip. Appreciate John doing that. 6:58 on Wisconsin's Morning News.